I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the update. Why would you want to play for the Marlins? Now, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but they're so terrible.
You could play every day and live in Miami.
Yeah, but you can't win there. Does that matter at all? You're probably going to go 61-101 next year. That's cool with you?
Not for me personally, but I could see it. I could see someone that's up in age. You know, like you do a Martin Prado bit where you spend 6 months on the disabled list, take 20 at-bats, go 17 for 19 against the Nationals probably, and then that's that.
Let's take Rendon and Strasburg out of the equation for a second. Who do you think people will be the most sad to see leave?
Howie.
The best of the rest?
Howie. Because of those moments, man. Because of that home run that changed everything. Which one am I talking about? You see the point? That grand slam, all those guys for years, whether it was Zimmerman would say it privately, Rizzo said it privately, different guys, and not in a super secret way, but just kind of shaking their head going, if we could ever get out of that division series, if we could ever get over that hump, watch out. Watch what could happen. We could finally let the steam valve off. And that's what Kendrick did in that moment against Joe Kelly, a 98-mile-an-hour fastball down and in. He bopped it out to center field for a grand slam. One of the great calls in D.C. history. Dave Jagler, thank you very much. Pummeled it, and that put them in the next round. As soon as they got there, oh, my God, they were whooping people. You know what I mean? You think that any Nats team in years past would have just swept the Cardinals in the NLCS, right? But as soon as they got past that point, it was free and easy. And Howie Kendrick's the one who overcame it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, though, I don't know why I feel this way. I think there are, other very minute role players on the team who were synonymous with joy and happiness, like Dozier and Parra, who will really be missed, too. People are going to miss Howie more after the playoff run. But you mean to tell me that Gerardo Parra and his .234 batting average signing elsewhere isn't going to lead to depression around the city that day? People love Parra,
They love some Parra, man.
He is the baby shark. He wears the glasses. Like, when you see guys walking down the street at the parade getting ovations, the pop for Parra is up there with what you'd get for Scherzer and Rendon. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a big reaction. You're right about that.
He's iconic. I think there's going to be a little bit of disappointment if Dan Hudson leaves just because of what he meant to the bullpen in the postseason. But you're right. It probably goes Stras and Rendon, 1 and 2. Zimmerman's, I think, gets separated as well into that group. But then of the rest, maybe Howie's first and everyone else is behind them. After Howie, you'd go Parra, I'm guessing, right?
I probably would, yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's funny. But, I mean, again, if you tell me there's an outfielder that hit in the 230s that the fan base overrates and gives too much credit to, I'd believe you because that's happened before.
Well, yeah, but the last guy didn't wear sunglasses that were colored and do the baby shark chomp and make the clubhouse the place to be.
Well, he homered in 2012, so why don't you settle down? He had a beard.
True.
He had a beard, Grant.
He did have a good beard, for sure. I hope for Nationals fans they can do their best to keep this thing as close to together as possible. But remember this. The Boston Red Sox tried their damnedest to keep everyone around.
Yeah,
they didn't make the playoffs
bunch of guys.
This
yeah.
year. We've seen teams, the Capitals are a good example. The Caps did a great job. They kept everyone around. Now they're really good right now. But they didn't get out of the first round last year. You're probably better off in some cases not overpaying to keep guys. Not giving the huge contract after the career year, letting some guys walk, and even though it's a painful goodbye, reloading the magazine to try to go back at it, than just saying, let's run this whole thing back. The amount of crazy things that had to happen for them to win that World Series. The morning of the parade, Danny and I had to go to the ballpark before we got bussed over to get on our float, which is still the craziest thing in the world to say.
You mean to tell me we were on a parade float? Just, of course, a normal thing.
So while we're watching, it's like sped up games at Nats Park. We were there for a couple of hours. They just had two of the Dodgers games on. I think it was game 4 and game 5 back to back.
Uh-huh.
The amount of things that had to happen just to win those two games, both elimination games that happened when they were losing both of those games. And that was just the two games that were on then, let alone all of the other things that happened, the five elimination games, the come-from-behind victories, the home runs late against the Astros, just the zaniness of the playoffs.
Normal stuff happened.
If you restarted the playoffs with this group right after they ended in Game 7 against the Astros 8 days ago, they're not winning the World Series again. It's just the stars aligning, kind of perfect storm.
I mean, the least of those crazy unlikely things. In the teeth of the wind, when all the balls were going to center field and dying, Ryan Zimmerman homered off a guy he'd never touched. He was 0-for-5 against Pedro Baez, right? Hadn't sniffed him. Takes a fastball up at his chin and hits it to center field for a homer. Every other ball that was hit incredibly well in that game died to center field, including, by the way, a ball that Trey Turner crushed, which would have been off the wall or over the wall, that fell in front of Cody Bellinger.
Right.
It fell in front of him because of how crazy the wind was knocking stuff down. He hit one into that went for a home run because, of course, he did. Right? Just it takes two dozen of those moments for it to happen.
I'd be surprised if some of these guys left and latched on with bad teams after seeing how fun it can be when you win.
Oh, man.
When I hear that report from Russell drawing interest from the Marlins, well, of course, the Marlins should want the Nationals players. If there's mutual interest, it would interest me.
You start overpaying to bring in some good culture type stuff?
Yeah. You want Howie Kendrick in your clubhouse because he's great for your clubhouse. But to me, if I'm Howie Kendrick, I'm going and I'm signing to be the DH for
Chicago.
The Astros.
Yeah, or something.
The Yankees.
Oh, man.
The White Sox, who are about to turn the corner. Maybe not there yet, but the Rays. You want to go to Florida? Go to the Tampa Bay Rays, DH every day for a playoff team that won almost 100 games this year.
Hit fourth with that staff.
Right.
Ooh.
He's the guy I have the hardest time of the role players seeing coming back. I just don't think the math works out. He made $5 million this past year. I would sign, if I was the Rays as a perfect team, if I was him, I'd give that guy 2-12, 2-14.
2-12 is the number I had.
Right now?
Maybe even more, honestly.
Now, maybe that'll look crazy when he gets like 1-5 or something. But honestly, with the money that gets thrown around for some of these dudes, I know he's 36. I believe Howie Kendrick will wake up hitting 287 until he's not waking up anymore. If he doesn't have to play the field, if it's just as simple as having him hit in your lineup every day, that guy is going to hit you 25 homers and hit 290 next year.
Hal, I got a checklist for you. Wake up, no problem, okay? Once you're up, lift weights and hit baseballs. You got it, coach. I'll be there.
Where can I go?
Right? I mean, that as strong a dude as you'll ever come across, and that guy was put on this earth to square up baseballs. Barrel on ball. And I'm telling you, I buy even the renaissance, the 2.0 Howie Kendrick, right? Because he talked about it post-game. At the World Series, Kevin Long calls him in the offseason. He's like, hey, what do I need to do? Expecting an answer of nothing. You're a great hitter. Here's what you stop doing. You stop stepping across towards home plate because you don't handle the inside pitch very well, and you just sort of get jammed a bunch. You don't have to do that. You can use the power at all fields, and you can rake. Oh, okay. 344 would have been a 30-homer hitter if he was able to play every day. That guy can hit, man. He can hit.
I was just looking at spot tracks here for the guys that had expiring contracts for the Nats.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Grace is listed. Matty Grace.
We didn't do a bring him back for Matt.
We didn't get to him.
Grace.
We ran out of time, kind of like the Jimmy Kimmel thing.
With all due respect to Matt Grace.
Matt Damon was supposed to be on.
If he was on the roster, by the way, Davey would still bring him in 70 times.
Next year?
Yeah.
It's possible.
He would have 60 appearances.
I think they're going to fix that bullpen up real nice.
You think so?
Yeah, because that's like the cheaper, quicker, easier thing you can do. You could throw some money at that problem without having to spend on the big boys and go get four or five relievers. If nothing else, it'll look like they fixed it. Because think about this offseason. We're like, oh, Trevor Rosenthal, of course.
We sat there,
Kyle
brilliant.
Bearclaw, this is awesome.
What
seventh and eighth
move.
Inning on lock. Neither of those guys were good. Both were out of the organization in short order.
Could you see, though, based on that, where they went, quote-unquote, went and got guys and spent a little bit, plus Rizzo's recent experiences, whether it was right or wrong, with Sean Kelly, Brandon Kintzler, some of the name guys that are out there saying, you know what? I'm still not going to spend on it. We're going to try to find more cheap options, see if we can find someone effective.
I think this makes you think if you're Rizzo and company, we're fine. We could do it our way. We just did. Won a championship.
We just did.
With Daniel Hudson in the playoffs and Sean Doolittle. And we masked efficiencies with starters. Now, I think you could try that another 100 times and it probably won't work out that way. But maybe it says, I don't need to spend a lot on the bullpen. I was right and they were wrong. The best free agents available, by the way, two of the top three in the sport are Nationals.
Yep.
Rendon and Strasburg, second and third on everybody's list behind Gerrit Cole. Zach Wheeler of the Mets. He'd look good in a Nats uniform if they lost Strasburg.
Jake Odorizzi, guy I like.
I like Odorizzi a lot. He's a little lower down, I would say. Madison Bumgarner, available. Yasmani Grandel, Younjin Ryu, Josh Donaldson, Marcel Ozuna. You mentioned him and Nicholas Castellanos. Maybe if you move Soto to first, could be in the outfield. You like Odorizzi a lot, as do I. Just outside of the top 10 with Dallas Keuchel. Mike Moustakas, to me, looks like a guy the Nats could add.
If no Rendon, I would 100% target that guy.
Yeah, he could play third, or he could play second. He
played second for Milwaukee a lot.
Both could be deficiencies. He was a second baseman this year. He's been third his whole career. Former top five pick, who was a three war guy overall this year, had an 845 OPS. Now, I will say what would worry me a little bit about that. You start to trend away from like contact on base, seeing pitches to, can you hit the ball out of the park in addition to all your strikeouts? Which is not the way they went this year.
Right.
But in terms of relievers, just thinking about who you could bring in, Will Smith, a 30-year-old left-hander who was great this year, would look great with the Nationals. And there's a couple of other arms available in the back end that are going to command more money than that, who you could throw cash at if that's the way you choose to go. Grant and Danny on the Fan with you until 2 o'clock at 1:30, 15 minutes from now. We've got a great Nationals prize that could be yours, but you've got to be listening. Let's rank our top five teams in the NFL. We have not given you power rankings over the last couple weeks.
It's been a
minute.
We've
been going crazy with the Nationals. So, it should be interesting. First time, long time. Start you off at number five. Work our way to one.
Number five for me, the Seattle Seahawks. Only weakness I can see is they don't rush the passer very well, GP. Even with Jadeveon Clowney, they have only 15 sacks as a team among the bottom of teams that are competitive, and they don't really get after the quarterback very well. But Russell Wilson, MVP in my humble opinion, 25 total touchdowns this year, only one interception. Chris Carson, he fumbles a lot, but still pretty good. Tyler Lockett has emerged. This is a really good, well-rounded club. Seattle, my number five, 7-2.
I have Seattle higher on my list. I've got the Baltimore Ravens fifth. I actually had the Ravens momentarily over the Seahawks because they recently beat them. I said, you know what? I think if they played right now on a neutral site, I'd probably pick going into the game Seattle. The last 2 weeks, the Ravens have completely changed my perception of them. But prior to 2 weeks ago, I just didn't think that much of them. They hadn't beaten anybody good, and they'd lost to the good teams they played to get to 4-2. By playing who they have now here recently, by dismantling the Patriots and shoving it down their throat, 1 week before that, by beating Seattle on the road, they have crept into my top five. They are for real. You know, my only question, when they've got to throw it to win it, when they're behind, when it's 3rd and 11 and they're behind the sticks, can they do that? I'm not sure yet. But I know that this offense with Lamar Jackson's a blast to watch. I know that it's working. I know that it's tough to prepare for. Teams can't stop them. The Ravens are going to be 7-2 after they shellack the Bengals this weekend. And this is where they are. They're really good. They beat bad teams pretty handily. And I think they're going to do that this weekend in Cincinnati. So give me Baltimore number five.
So believe it or not, as bullish as I was on the Ravens before the season, and all they've done is go 6-2, they just missed my top five.
Really?
Because defensively, I don't trust them right now. The same problem I listed for Seattle, the Ravens are even worse off. All the pressure they create is via the blitz. Getting Jimmy Smith back, though, in the secondary is going to help them. Number four for your boy. I got the Green Bay Packers. Despite not playing that well this past week, they're still 7-2. They're taking the ball away on defense. They've brought Devontae Adams back. Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgersing. Creme hole the floor is using Aaron Jones effectively. Jamal Williams is a nice change of pace. I like this Green Bay Packers club. I think they'll be late in the dance here in the NFC. They're my fourth best team in the NFL at 7-2 in a competitive division.
They fell out of my top five with that disaster against the Chargers.
Bad game.
Tough to unsee it.
Yeah, they were bad.
And they went from fourth to also receiving votes. I might have them sixth if I kept extrapolating out the votes beyond the top five. But I've got Seattle, who you mentioned, four. They just, every single year, refuse to take the step back that everybody projects of them. Now, San Francisco in the West is unbeaten at 8-0. They're a plus 133 in net margin. You're going to see them on our list a little higher up, I'm guessing. Seattle doesn't have the margin of even the Rams, who are a game and a half behind them, plus 40. Seattle's just plus 18. They win a lot of close games, but the reason I think that is Russell Wilson in winning time makes a lot of plays. They steal some games they shouldn't, makes them frisky. I do like their defense more than you do. I think they can rush the quarterback. I know that they've been inconsistent. They've allowed 230 points, just as an example. Only the Cardinals, 251, have allowed more in the division. But I think they could generate takeaways. And I'm a believer in Russell Wilson. Give me the Seahawks, number four on my big board.
Number three, it's hard for me to justify this. It's my own confirmation bias. It's my own distrust. I get the San Francisco 49ers at number three, even though they haven't lost. They're 8-0. What more could they have done? They couldn't possibly have had a better record because they've only played eight games. I'm impressed with them. I'm still not ready to put them up as the cream of the crop. I got them as my second-best team in the NFC, third-best overall. They keep this up, they're going to have to reach the top spot sooner rather than later, you would think. Defensively, they are excellent. I don't trust their offense to be dynamic enough if they've got to get themselves into a back-and-forth kind of game. They're running the ball very well. Teams have run it effectively against them, but they've been behind, so they've gone away from it. I think now without Quan Alexander, who's out for the rest of the season, the defense might suffer a little bit. But San Francisco, very good. My reluctance to move them up higher is my issue, not theirs.
Yeah, I've got the 49ers third on my list as well. I don't know that you got to explain yourself or apologize for that. Third out of 32 teams is pretty darn good. And it's not like they're beating the A-plus clubs in the league every single week. I like what I have seen kind of across the board from this group so far. You can only play who's on the schedule. Jimmy Garoppolo has turned it over seven times with picks, but he's got 13 touchdowns to go along, 100 rating. He's completing 71% of his passes in a really quarterback-friendly offense led by Kyle Shanahan. Right now, Matt Breda averages 5 yards per carry. They got Tevin Coleman back, who scored 5 touchdowns already. And they're deep at receiver. We've seen Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson all contribute. Their receiving core needed help, and they went out and acquired Emmanuel Sanders.
He's going to help them.
41 catches, 504 yards halfway through the year, on pace for 1,000 in two stops. Their tight end is one of the better playmakers in the league after the catch. And George Kittle, who's on pace to go for over 1,000 yards as well. So I'm a big fan of the 49ers. We didn't even talk about the defense, which is outstanding and shut the Redskins out at FedEx Field on a rainy, gross, nasty day. But they're third for me because New Orleans is number two. The Saints are 7-1. Their numbers, just you look at the points, 15th, yards, 14th, passing yards, 10th, rushing yards, 15th. Nothing all that sexy. Some of that's because Drew Brees has been out. Teddy Bridgewater was caretaking beautifully. 9 touchdowns and 2 picks. Only got sacked 11 times while he was in there. Drew Brees comes back and immediately throws for 370 and 3. So combined from their quarterbacks this year, they've got 14 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and a rating over 100. They got one of the best playmakers in the sport, Alvin Kamara, averaging 4 yards per rush while catching 33 balls out of the backfield. They've got a power back in Latavius Murray, who I think is every bit as good as Mark Ingram was last year, has 4 rushing touchdowns to go along with 4.5 a pop. And they've got a receiving core led by Michael Thomas, who's on pace for almost 140 catches and almost 1,600 yards this year, who's unbelievable and maybe the best wide receiver in football. So that's their offensive roster, their defense. They get after the quarterback. They sack you. They beat you up. They're physical. You're going to feel it after you play them. I love watching the Saints. I think they'd be 8-0 right now if Brees never got hurt. Instead, they're 7-1. I've got them second.
Saints 2 for me as well. Only thing I would add, my cause for concern, that may not be the right number but or the right word, but Michael Thomas has about 600 yards more receiving than their number two receiver, whomever that is. They need someone else to step up at some point as you enter into winning time in December and January. But they're my number two team as well. Echo everything you said. Leads us to number one. Even though they lost this weekend, even though Baltimore got them, and I mean got them, they beat them up pretty good. Really impressive. One of the most impressive wins this season. The Baltimore Ravens beat the New England Patriots. Patriots still 8-1. Still, to me, the best team in the AFC. Still, to me, the best team overall. They were not going to go undefeated. I still think they end up probably 14-2. Number one seed in the AFC. You can book them in the AFC title game. I think they are the best team in the NFL, despite their loss this weekend, which you give the Ravens a ton of credit for, and you should.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Your chance to win a really cool Nats prize next. We're with you for another half hour today on The Fan. The Caps play tonight. Thursday night football, there is plenty to get you ready for. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Right now, if you want to be the 10th caller at 800-636-1067, you can win a copy of Fight Finished, the official World Series Championship commemorative book. The hardcover, full-color book covers the entire season and Victory Parade for a limited time. 106.7 The Fan listeners, that's you, can save 25% when you order your copy this week at worldseriesbook.com. Use the code THEFAN at checkout. That's worldseriesbook.com. Use the code THEFAN at checkout. Courtesy of Skybox Press. Details at thefandc.com/contests.
Win that book. Get you some.
Why not?
Get it.
Thursday night football tonight. Chargers, Raiders. 4-5, 4-4. Wish there was a little bit more Redskins relevance here, although I guess you could say even if it was an NFC East game, what really matters to the Redskins at this point? It's not like they're vying for the division.
Seriously. All the Redskins and the Redskins fans should be doing is rooting for other bad teams to get their second and third wins, right? Like you're sitting there pumping your fist for the Dolphins to figure one out. Let's go Bengals if they get a game somewhere here and there. Sneaky teams, too. Like Tampa Bay's only got two wins. They got to find a way to get a third or a fourth win. Atlanta, let's go Falcons. All the bad teams, you root for them.
I'm going to watch tonight's game because I'm getting back hardcore into watching every game and every minute of every contest.
I think it's the right
play
for you.
That's what I did for the first several weeks. Then the Nats kind of took me away from that, which was good. I was happy to do that.
No, I was very happy to do it. Yeah.
But now I can get right back into it. Looking ahead to some of the games this weekend, though, it's an important week, right? You got the bye week. You don't have to worry about the Redskins ruining everything.
Yeah, real football's going to be played.
You get to just hop around and see what you want to see.
There are some big ones.
There's some good ones. There's also some kind of stinkers. So one thing I am excited about is for the Chiefs at the Titans, 6-3, 4-5, Pat Mahomes is expected to be back. Right now, this game's off the board. There is not a favorite. It's kind of a wash. And I think it's because they don't know yet if Mahomes is going to play or not.
Mm-hmm.
But if Pat Mahomes comes back, I would think the Chiefs will pummel the Titans and get to 7-3, right?
You would think so. Now, Tennessee, they can play some defense. They'll slow you down. They'll stop you. Derrick Henry's first, second, and third down. But they're not great.
Tennessee is the team I just can't quite figure out. I always think that they're worse than they are. Like, if you would have said to me at any point in the last 2 years, what's their record? My guess would be a game or two worse than they are. I would have thought they were 3-6 right now. They're 4-5.
With all due respect, I think you can figure them out. You've just encapsulated it. They play boring, old, unfun style of football, which is to limit mistakes, punt a lot, let you screw up. It's like playing against a really frustrating tennis player. They sit on the baseline and they just return everything and let you hit it into the net because you get sick of it. That's what they do. It sucks. It's not aesthetically pleasing. I hate watching them play. They're not fun. I hate everything about them. It's so much Derrick Henry who takes 9 hours to turn direction. It's bad. They have these promising young receivers that turn into afterthoughts every year. I'm tired of hearing about the next big thing who's going to catch a pass in Tennessee. It's not going to happen. Stop trying to make it happen. They're boring, but they'll end up with 8 wins. They always do.
The Falcons-Saints game, bad. Giants-Jets game, bad. Cardinals-Bucks game, boring. Here's a little intrigue. Now, maybe it's just because I'm Cleveland Browns Paulson.
Well, Cardinals-Bucks are going to have a lot of points, but it's going to be bad.
Cardinals-Bucks?
I mean? Yeah, it's not boring. It's not a lot of points.
Well, that's true, but I'm saying irrelevant to the not national
relevant.
Audience.
Correct.
3-5-1-2-6.
Agreed.
Will they pick 7th or 9th, those two teams? The Bills have a chance to get to 7-2.
Yeah.
Not a good 7-2, but 7-2.
Cleveland's trying to save its season, man.
The Browns' season's on the line. I think they've probably done themselves enough damage now that they can't make the playoffs. But at the end of that game at home, either people are going to be calling for Freddie Kitchens' head and speculating that Baker Mayfield is in big, big trouble as a starter because it's a reactionary league. Look at the conversations we're having about Dwayne Haskins already. Or they're 3-6. They beat a good Buffalo team. They've kind of stabilized for a moment, and they'll have a chance maybe to get to 9-7 or wherever they want to go. They're going to have to go on a hell of a run now, though.
Yeah, they dug themselves too many holes. They had a really tough schedule in this middle part, and the thought was, you know, you go 500 or just below in that stretch, then you can go on a run. That run may not be coming with how dysfunctional it looks.
I think Lions-Bears this weekend is a little bit of an elimination game. Loser of that game doesn't have a chance to be a wild card team. Neither probably will anyway, but I'll bet you can fool yourself in the building this week, you know, if you play for one of those two teams. But if you're the Bears and you fall to 3-6 especially.
It's good not Irene.
If you're the Lions and you're 3-5-1, you're probably in a real bad spot.
Agreed. And neither team is bad, by the way. I mean, Chicago has a bad element, Mitch Trubisky. Detroit is better than 3-4-1, and yet maybe they're not because that's what the record is.
Yeah.
But they had Kansas City dead to rights. They should have beaten Arizona in that dumb tie. They could absolutely be, I don't know, you could just give them a couple wins there. They could be 6-2.
Trubisky the new Blake Bortles, by the way?
Yeah, oh yeah. Mitch Bortles, as far as I'm concerned.
Mitch Bortles. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of quarterbacks that draw the ire of the national audience all the time. Like, I saw everyone tweeting Kirk Cousins a slid to avoid, like, taking on a hit. Probably could have gotten another yard before the hit, but he slid baseball style to avoid contact, a yard short of the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, three of the NFL blogs, like, right away tweeted it out, like, Kirk Cousins doesn't know where the sticks are. Dude's got 16 touchdowns, three picks, a 112 quarterback rating. No matter what he does, his team, at that moment when they tweeted it, looked like they were headed to 7-2. It doesn't matter what he does. People just make fun of him.
Which is never going to be right.
There's guys like that. But then I think there's also just the quarterback everyone decides is terrible and has to Joan on all the time. And it used to be Blake Bortles. I'm thinking now it's Mitch Trubisky.
And I think it is. And the
is
mob,
there anyone else in that category?
The mob gets angry, but they're right about Mitch. Right. Is what I'll say. But yeah, I don't know if anybody else. Yeah, I don't know if anybody else makes it in there. But top of my head, it's like the Blake Bortles award. You're right about that.
Here's an interesting game: Rams Steelers in Pittsburgh.
Dude, that's a big one.
4:25. I think the Rams beat Pittsburgh badly in this game.
Well, the
However,
Rams need it, dude.
Pittsburgh has not been bad.
If They're you look 4-4. At
even their losses lately, are really good teams, very close games. Mike Tomlin, who gets pummeled and crushed all the time, has done a hell of a job with Mason Rudolph and this team. They're hanging around. If they beat the Rams, and LA's 5-4, first of all, that is a bad look for Sean McVay and the win-now Rams. But the Steelers might be a thing as in terms of the wild card.
The Steelers 4-1 in their last five. The one is an overtime loss to Baltimore.
They could easily be 5-0.
Now, granted, one of those is the Dolphins,
is
so
Mason
congratulations
Rudolph
there.
Doing? Because I've never really watched and been overly impressed by him.
He is.
They just keep winning.
Throwing to running backs. He's getting a lot of yardage from that play that you want to call a run, where he flips it up and somebody comes
pass.
In motion.
Here are
the tap
numbers.
Pass.
You ready for Mason Rudolph's numbers?
Yeah, they're more impressive than you think, but I'm telling you, it's nothing. It's all short.
Five starts so far. How many yards do you think he has?
I happen to know because I'm looking at it.
Okay,
but it's over 1,000.
Yeah, 1,088 yards, 10 touchdowns, four picks, and a 95 rating for Mason Rudolph. The numbers are legit.
He is throwing it short.
I got to go back and look at some of those. Because look at the games, to see how the numbers
Jalen Samuels had a Roy Helu type day the other day. I think he had like double-digit catches. It was like 12 catches for 80 yards. Not even that.
And then the last three games of the weekend.
These are good ones.
Sunday night, Monday night. Huge game. Sunday afternoon, Panthers-Packers. Carolina's better without Cam Newton and with Kyle Allen. They have been all year. They got Green Bay coming off of a bad loss in Lambeau. Next game is the Vikings and the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Minnesota falls to 6-4. They're now on the outside looking in from a playoff standpoint. They've got to make the playoffs based on the last 2 years and investing what they did in Cousins. They got to beat a good Dallas team that got right last week against the Giants.
Yeah, that's a huge game.
And then Monday Night Football, Seattle and San Francisco, a combined 15-2. Basically, NFC West supremacy on the line there.
Yeah, that's the game of the weekend, and it's awesome that it's on Monday night. That's been increasingly rare, by the way.
Yeah,
typically, your
happens.
Game of the week is Sunday. Just so happened, that divisional matchup, because San Francisco has overachieved and then some, that is a must-see event. And Seattle, by the way, on the road at San Francisco. The Richard Sherman Bowl strikes again. Bigly.
Grant and Danny on the Fan with you until 2 o'clock. Got one more segment. As we continue, we'll talk to our buddy Evan Abrams and get some of the projected betting lines on the games this weekend. Evan Abrams is on with us, sponsored by the Action Network. Looking for an edge? Download the free Action Network app. Get live odds and expert analysis for every game. Right now on G&D on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, our buddy Evan Abrams is standing by. And Evan, why don't we start with the fact that we got a huge game in college football this weekend, Alabama-LSU. I've seen right around 6.5 for the line. What are you seeing right now, and what are you thinking about the matchup?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me on. Listen, this matchup doesn't have 9-6 written all over it. This is a different game than we saw a few years ago, and the over-under kind of spells a story. It's 63. It hasn't really moved too much. Alabama sitting as a 6.5-point favorite. I think the line is basically telling you two is okay, two will play. I know we don't have that in the books right now, but as a 6.5-point favorite over the number, two team in the country versus number three, kind of tells you the story. The interesting thing is the market. 59% of the tickets on LSU, 66% of the money. And people are kind of flooding the under, 63% of the tickets on the under right now. If I'm going to play the game, I'm going to play what they set as the over-under. They set it at 63 for a reason. It really hasn't moved much because I think people are a little worried about Tua, so you're seeing some under money. I kind of like the over. That's going to be one of my strong plays in this game. If it starts slow, maybe it comes down a little bit and you're able to hit it in the 50s. But to me, that's the interesting play. That's the way to go. I'm also going to look at LSU's money line. I mean, if this gets any higher, it was 7. I tasted it at 7, but that's the play for me. That's the way I'm going to look at this one. Listen, it's the most high-profile game of the year. The line's pretty sharp, but that's probably the way you got to attack it.
Evan, a couple NFL lines surprised me. It's a Sunday night game and then Monday night. When I went to check, I thought you might see a pick-up, maybe Minnesota by a point. They're on the road against Dallas. And San Francisco, I'm seeing 6.5 favored at home. I know they're at home over Seattle. I thought that would be closer as well. Am I right to be a little bit surprised, or tell me why I'm wrong?
Yeah, sure. I mean, let's go one by one. Let's start with Minnesota-Dallas. In this game, the story is going to be Kirk Cousins, and it's going to be whether he can show up in prime time. It's been his Achilles heel throughout his entire career, and I think the bettors know that walking in, especially after what they've seen in recent past. He's 6-12 straight up, 6-12 against the spread, 1-7 straight up, 2-6 ATS on the road in that spot, and he always struggles against above 500 teams. So I think that's the way to bet, especially in Dallas' stadium. So I think 3 is the right call there, basically saying a pick'em game on neutral, assuming Dallas has 3-point home field advantage. And the tickets are kind of in agreement, 54% on Dallas, which so the market looks about right there. Now, the Monday night game, now this is the fun one. I think many people are going to look at this number at 6, and they're going to say this is just way too many points for Seattle. 65% of the tickets on Seattle. People are going to line up to get that many points with Russell Wilson, and he's the best quarterback we've almost ever seen in prime time. 25-6-1 straight up, 22-7-3 against the spread, and he's got this game on the West Coast, right? So he doesn't really have to, he's in his home territory to a degree, and it's not too much travel. If I'm going to play the game, I actually kind of like San Francisco. I think Seattle has been a farce most of the season. I think a lot of what they do is measured around Russell Wilson and his magic and what he does in the pocket and what he's able to escape. And the numbers kind of show him that. And San Francisco should do a great job in containing it. And really, the spread's that number for a reason. So I think that's one way I've got to look at the game. I would love 5.5. I know that's what it opened at. It's now up to 6. But my feeling is the public's going to continue to roll in on Seattle. So that line might come back down.
Evan, thank you as always, buddy. We really appreciate you.
Appreciate you, pal.
Yeah, thank you.
Great work. Evan Abrams of the Action Network, sponsored each and every week on the show. If you're looking for an edge, download the free Action Network app. Get live odds and expert analysis for every game. Right now, joining us from across the way in Studio One. Sounds very professional.
Studio One.
Yeah. Studio A, where it's very nice and prepared for television.
Appropriately temperatured.
Chad Dukes versus the world about to begin, and Chad is with us. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. It's not appropriately temperatured until my producers get in here because Drab T-shirt and Eric Pickle are soccer mothers, and they wanted 86 degrees in there where they're wearing their mock turtlenecks. It's abominable.
At least you have a few hours, though, for the correction, because we get in whenever we get in before the show, sure. And our studio, because of them, which is linked to theirs, is 100 degrees. It's disgusting.
Yeah, we have a lot to thank the junkies for, the three of us, as far as our radio careers.
Like jobs.
But them, they've been going through menopause for the past 15 years, and it really hasn't helped anybody out.
Hooded sweatshirts in the summertime.
Just
it's amazing.
The worst.
You got a big event this weekend, Dukes.
I do, boys. Thanks for letting me come on and promote it. It's the Chad Dukes Veterans Day Jamboree at the Tally Ho Theater out in Leesburg. They've been absolutely wonderful.
Donated love that place.
The space. Yeah, it's great, Danny. You played there many times. We did 106.7 The Fan live there. Mm-hmm. It's great. I'm doing a concert with three bands I really love, doing a silent auction with some really cool stuff, a TJ Oshie game-used stick, a whole bunch of tickets and stuff. Lots of fun things. All of it goes to Stop Soldier Suicide, which is a charity I work very closely with. It costs me lots of money, actually. I don't make any money. Nobody makes money but the charity. I'm very proud about that. So you go to tallyhotheater.com for tickets, or I'm on Instagram. It's Chad Duke's Veterans Day Jamboree, all one word if you want to see all the silent auction stuff and the bands. And really cool event. I'll be out there all day, so I hope people come out on Saturday at the Tally Ho.
I think the coolest part about it is, as you said, it's actually more rare than people realize, where the proceeds go to the charity.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's like there's an event and a portion of or some of, like a little bit, it's like kind of a name only. This is great because the organization you care about gets the benefit.
It's a great point. I got to thank Elite Shooting Sports. They pick up a tab on the bands for making that happen. But you're right, Danny. Awareness is great, but I feel like we do a lot of raising awareness when the money is what's going to get the work done.
People are aware. Yeah.
They're aware of things. Let's raise the money now.
Chad, enjoy the weekend, and hopefully it goes very, very well.
Thank you, boys. Appreciate the time.
You got it,
Chad
buddy.
Dukes versus the world is next. If you miss any part of our show, thefanpc.com/audio.
We are Grant and Danny, and our watch has ended.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.